Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. I'm Jared Stansberry. Today's edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast is brought to you by our good friends over at Heartland Flagpoles and Flags. They've got any kind of flag option you could want, Rob Gray.
Indeed, they do. And I was feeling really good about Cubs flying the W two in a row. That obviously didn't happen last night. Hats off to Clayton Kershaw and the Pen. In an incredible performance, but man, Cubs, Dodgers, any team.
I was just going to say, if you're like me and you want the Cubs to lose in this National League Championship Series, they've got all kinds of Los Angeles Dodgers options in flags. They've got options for every team in every sport. It doesn't matter. Plus, you can get any kind of American flag, all kinds of different military historical flags, and just all kinds of different cool decorative flags that you would want. You can check out their showroom at 3719 Southwest 9th Street in Des Moines, or you can give them a call at 1-800-340-1157, or you can always check them out online at www.heartlandflagpoles.com. That is Heartland Flags, and they are the presenting sponsor of the seniors. What's up, Rob Gray?
Well, different kind of Iowa State football loss to probably touch on, some hoops to talk about. Monte Morris making his customary appearance on the initial Bob Cousy Award watch list. And an interesting week for us, all the usual pods, but without football availability, physical football availability, a little bit lighter on that note heading into the bye week.
Yeah, probably won't be quite as much news this week. I know you've got some features in the works.
Yep,
I've got some stuff, basketball stuff that I'm working on, and then I'm going to work on getting a hold of some of these recruits from that visited for Hilton Madness last week too.
Nice, nice.
And then of course, as always, well, last week we had to miss out on the trail, so listen to this bull crap, dude. I show up, or Jeff had to do CFTV Live an hour late, and then Adam calls me the day before. He's like, asked me if I saw that. He's like, let's record on the trail at noon. Okay, so he gets there, or I got there like 11:30 to the office. He gets there right at about noon, and he comes in, and he's all doing his thing, and then he's like, oh, crap, I forgot the Apple TV for CFTV. So we had to go get an Apple TV, didn't get to record on the trail. Everybody missed out on the trail last week.
That is rough.
All because of Adam Gray.
You know, we love Adam in a lot of ways, and not in some others. This was one of his bad moments.
Yeah. This is just unprofessional.
You know what he would have done to you, if it had been the other way around.
Yeah, he would have. Called I would have never out. Heard the end of it.
He would have called you out all over the place, every avenue on social media, shouting it from the rooftops. But like I said, we love Adam, but. Yeah, that's a tough deal. See, it'll be twice as good this week, I'm sure.
Yeah, twice as good this week, as always on Wednesdays. CFTV Live tomorrow. We'll be back at its normal time, 12:15. But, it's going to be interesting to see, what happens with Iowa State here in the bye week and then going into next week with Kansas State. And they've got the best part of their schedule coming up, I mean, in my opinion, in a lot of people's opinions, but...
Yeah, I tend to agree. Kansas State, I saw Ertz got hurt. Huebner came back in. They kind of hung with Oklahoma for a while, but, 21-point loss in Norman isn't – I was surprised that their defense wasn't just a little bit hardier given what they'd done previously, top-rated in the Big 12, really stingy on the scoring front, even against some pretty elite offenses. Got to get that game. Get that game. It's homecoming. You had the narrow misses. You had your moments at Texas. You had the halftime lead that if you're up 14-0 instead of 6-0, I think the Longhorns might get in their heads a little bit. But when you're dominating the game and it's 6-0 and then they're able to drive down, all the mistakes Texas were making too.
Well, the point when they, Willie Harvey forces the Deontay Foreman fumble.
Yeah.
When they didn't score a touchdown right there, it was like, crap, it's going to be tough to win this game.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I mean, obviously the offensive line had been, on paper, vastly overachieving since the Iowa game.
Yeah.
Really doing well, protecting pretty well, run blocking well. That just didn't happen on Saturday. I mean, Texas could have had 12 sacks. I think they finished officially with 8. Could be wrong by one or something there, but I mean, they were just landing in park. It didn't matter who was in there.
I want to ask you about their lives. I want to ask you about landing in park. It seemed like Joel was getting his groove going a little bit there in the second quarter, and then they went to park, and Joel didn't, I don't think Lanning came back in the first half.
No.
You know, I don't know about you. That didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, but it's tricky, this rotation thing. And I think we've all said we kind of like it as guys aren't separating and they've had their moments. I think Lanning clearly had better moments than Park throughout that game. Mm-hmm. Even after I think Park did three straight series there to close out the first half. And look, we all know they're both capable. But at some point do you go, you know, Lanning did get you points on two early drives. Do you give him that last drive first, you know, or, you know, after Park gets two, do you switch back? Again, they're smarter football minds than we are there in the coaching staff for sure. But that felt kind of off to me as well. And we'll see how that's adjusted going forward too. I think they'll still do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of that's luck and timing. And gosh, when the offensive line is just not up to snuff against a really good Texas front, but I'd say not maybe as talented, but certainly not as high performing as Oklahoma State, who the offensive line did, I think, mm-hmm. quite well against, mm-hmm. all things considered. It's a bit of a head scratcher, but again, it's going to happen. And I think I touched on it, that when you're making progress, occasionally there's the two steps back after you've taken the couple steps forward. And that's kind of how that game felt. They stayed competitive into the second half, but, you know, the offense just could not get anything going. The defense took a step forward, I think.
Well, yeah, I thought the defense played really well, especially in the first half. And even in that second half, like, when they scored, it was on big plays,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And I don't.
But the one when they scored and then they got called back and they scored the next play, that was about as predictable as anything you could ever imagine.
Yeah, and Iowa State had one of those, I remember, and that was one of the signs that the offense was getting going. But, yeah, that's, you know, Kamari Cotton-Moy was banged up. I know he was limited to a degree. I think his impact on the defense is you can't overstate it. Just in terms of not only him getting to the right place, but making sure other guys are in the right places. And a couple of those big plays, guys were clearly not in the right spot. Mm-hmm. You know, wide open receivers. No corners in sight, really, just kind of safeties, kind of trying to figure out where to go. So, kind of a tough deal there in the second half. But, you know, I'd say some progress on defense and definitely some regression on offense that needs to be turned around against, again, a good Kansas State. You know, if both those things can come together, the offense gets better again, the defense maintains at least what they were able to do much of the game against Texas, you've got a really good shot, I think, against the Wildcats, despite their stellar defense.
What is the ceiling for Deshaunte Jones?
I've seen a lot of people muse about that on Twitter, and that he could be, and a number of people, that he could end up being the most productive Iowa State, once his career is finished, could end up with the most productive career of anyone on the current roster. And I think that's saying a lot, given what Alan Lazard has produced already.
Well, yeah, considering that he's probably going to be the all-time leading receiver by the time he's done in almost every category.
But Jones just has that wiggle and that, I mean, the seemingly the instinct, too, and the savvy. I mean, you've got to be smart. You got to know what you're doing when they put him in that position to throw or run in the Oklahoma State game, and he made the right decision each time. I think he could be – he clearly shows the potential to be Iowa State's best receiver of all time.
He shows – or this is somewhere that I won't be surprised to see them utilize him in the future. He looks like he can be an electric punt returner.
Mm. Yeah, I could see that. Oh, yeah. When he makes a quick move.
Yeah.
He's into north-south mode immediately.
Like, Trevor Ryan is fast.
Mm-hmm.
But Trevor Ryan – I don't know that Trevor Ryan has the side-to-side quickness and then the ability to go 0 to 100 in a second like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. He's got great straight line speed. Mm-hmm. I mean, elite straight line speed as his track background shows. But yeah, there is that lateral explosiveness
right.
that Deshaunte Jones shows that is truly special. I mean, you know, I still think that probably Lazard has a more I guess, productive career in terms of maybe touchdowns and yards and receptions, you know, possibly records in all those categories. But in terms of explosiveness, in terms of big plays and consistently making big plays, you know, just a true freshman. And he's the guy for Iowa State in that regard now.
Well, I think the difference for DeShonte and Allen is that, you know, for 3 years or 2 years, it was just Allen, really, you know. And, I mean, at least right now, it looks like DeShonte will have Carson Epps. He'll have Hakeem Butler, you know. So, like, that, to an extent, that could open things up for
Chase
him.
Allen.
You'll have Chase Allen out there, too, you know. And so, to an extent, that could open things up for DeShonte. But at the same time, I think he's going to share catches more with some of these other guys that are on the team right now than Allen had to his first 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. But it could be one of those guys you see so often in the NFL or – on a Baylor or Okie State when their offenses are really having, you know, 3 catches for 89 yards and a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying, like, I don't think Allen, if he breaks the record for career receptions, which I think he's on pace to do, like, quite easily, we might not see that from DeShonte, but yards, you know, touchdowns, he catches a lot of touchdowns, clearly. I mean, his, like, catch-to-touchdown ratio is pretty high.
Yeah.
So, like, I think he'll get a lot of touchdowns in his career. I think he'll get a lot of yards, but maybe he won't quite have that, you know, he won't have quite as many games where 10 catches, 8 catches. It'll be, like you said, 4 catches, 88 yards and 2 touchdowns, you know.
Yeah, I see that as well. Obviously, helping to stay healthy throughout, but, yeah, very much a huge bright spot. Perhaps the biggest bright spot for this team, other than the fact that after looking so lost the first two games, they really played darn well in the next three. And not, you know, they've clearly righted the ship to some degree in terms of execution. They've just got to be able to execute down the stretch. And I think, again, that goes back to depth. I think that, you know, the recruiting class this year looked so good. Next year, hold on to most of those guys, add to it. You're building that depth. Even, I think, by next season, it's going to be markedly improved.
Yeah. Well, they return, you know, they lose stuff on the they lose stuff on the you know, you lose guys on the offensive and defensive line, but so many of the skill position players are back. Sorry, these guys are driving me nuts in Slack right now. Do you just see what just transpired here?
I'm just about to pull it up here. Is it a random? Is the random thread or is it the, okay?
No, it's Adam Gray and Brent Bloom.
Oh, good Lord.
We're discussing where we're going to have our lunch meeting on Thursday.
Nice. Some really nice options there.
Yeah.
Put your 2 cents in there.
I'm not even going to go there.
Yeah, we don't need to mention the options that have been brought up.
But, yeah, I mean, I feel better. Pretty much every week I feel better about where they're going.
Yeah.
You know?
Where the program's going. In this season... foregone conclusion. You're 1-6. You're not going to achieve, you know, your baseline goal of getting to a bowl game. And I mean, that would be stunning. They reeled off 5 straight wins on their way into something, but that would be beyond stunning.
Yeah.
That would be like, you know, people would be falling over, you know, so it just, you know, all over in Ames. They'd just be walking along and they'd be falling over or something would be.
It'd be like a TV show.
Frogs would be falling from the sky or something.
Yeah.
But still, the market improvement, and can see the building toward something.
Right. So you want to talk about basketball?
Yeah, let's talk.
You skipped out on Hilton Madness.
I did.
But it was a fun event. It's good. It's a good event.
Yeah, I was at the first ones. And
I'm not going to lie and say the scrimmage was interesting.
Yeah. Was it like... it's my guess that it would be kind of like a D-League scrimmage. A lot of just running around. Were they playing tunes?
This is funny because I was sitting there with Dylan Montz from Cedar Rapids Gazette during the event. And we're sitting up on press row, and he turns to me and he says, "I feel like I'm in an Iowa Energy game." It felt like an energy game. Yeah. The place wasn't full, but it, you know, it was full enough, and you know, everybody's just there having some fun. There's a lot of kids, not much defense, and a lot of dunks.
That's what they're there. That's the entertainment aspect of it. Yeah. I mean, to go with the 3-point shooting and
The only thing missing at the energy games is they don't have Scott Sipker.
That's true. That's true. He can pump everybody up. It looked like the crowd was very similar, you know, like lower bowl filled.
Yeah, there wasn't – I know that at least that first year – I didn't go last year, but the first year they had it. I know there was a little trickle up into the upper deck. There wasn't any of that this year, but, yeah, the lower bowl was mostly full.
Yeah, some fine dunks. Deontay Burton did no surprise. Got pushed by Nick Babb, though.
I was a little disappointed by the dunks, I'll be honest.
I did see the highlights, and there were a number of misses, weren't there?
Yeah, wait. There was more misses than there was makes. That's always disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, you're not defending. Now, maybe they're trying to, you know, take it that extra notch, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. when you're always trying to take it an extra notch at whatever round you're in, you know, the chance of, you know, losing it as you're getting up or putting it off the heel or whatever is higher. But I remember that last year, too. There were quite a few misses. There were a few just amazing flushes, like the, you know, particularly by Burton, but I'm sure that was sort of the case. It sounds kind of similar to what we saw last year.
Yeah. And then the 3-point contest, I would say that was the highlight of the night. When, I mean, Donovan Jackson hit like 15 of his last 16 shots or something like that.
It's unreal.
In the second round, I think, to beat Monte. And then, I mean, he was just good in the finals. The dude can shoot, man. He just looked, I told you before we went on the air, he just looks smooth. Everything he does just looks smooth.
Yeah. Whether he's handling the ball or whether he's shooting the ball, it's just a great fluid movements. Yeah, I'll be really excited to see him play. And the boon that it is to Monte to have him, to diminish his minutes. And that's often a positive correlation. Taking minutes down can amp up production.
I know that Donovan's going to be the backup point guard. But I really like this lineup where they play together. I like the prospect of that. I think that is going to be very, very interesting.
Well, when they go extra small?
Yeah.
I mean, because judging by the amount of offense that it looks like Jackson can provide as well, and we know how much Monte's improved in that regard, just the playmakers and the savviness. I mean, Thomas and Naz are no slouches in terms of finding guys in at their spot, in rhythm, too. I mean, you know, if Jackson in game time conditions can come close to replicating the high percentage.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not
that high.
Yeah, you're never going to make that many in a row, but just really put up a nice number, you know, with 40% plus from three. I mean, you've got four guys capable of doing that.
Yeah.
Every night. And that's more than they've had. Even in these years where, you know, they've said, hey, well, if a couple of us are off, we know the other guy's not going to be, or very rarely are they going to be. Well, that's like one more person added to that usual mix of three guys that's kind of in that realm.
Well, then you could, I mean, Deontay Burton will be I bet he'll be a 30% plus, you know.
He started out really well last year.
What about Nick Babb, too? Everybody talks about him being a good three-point shooter, saying he's better than his brother.
Yeah, that's eye-opening. And
yeah.
As were Prohm's comments, both.
As long as he stays woke.
Yeah, that's right. It's got to stay woke.
Yeah.
Got to stay woke, which I'm not sure, because I can't imagine anybody with the last name Babb, and it's Weiler Babb, but hyphenated for him, but from that family that doesn't have the want to, it just might be that gets a little bit lost in translation at times. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, but Prohm talking about him perhaps being the most NBA-ready type of player in terms of skill sets. That was eye-opening. You know, the change in Deontay Burton, that was really eye-opening. And
I think that Nick Babb is like, he's almost that wild card that allows them to play like 20 different styles, you know? Because if he can go in there and play the four and rebound and defend a four-man, and then Deontay can do whatever he's got to do and defend a five, you know, quote-unquote five, that lineup's tough to guard. That's really tough to guard.
Well, you can break down a lot of guys one-on-one in those, either whether you're playing a half court, whether you slowed it down a little bit, or if you're running.
And then it doesn't even matter. I mean, it doesn't matter if you've got Matt or Naz or Donovan or Monte. You can have any mix of those guys out there. And that's a lineup that's going to get up and down. They're going to score. And as long as they can defend and rebound, that lineup's going to beat some people. And that's six guys right there. You know, not even including some front court players that we think are pretty good, that, I don't know, that makes me feel pretty good. I don't, How many teams in the country even have six guys that like could score like that?
I can't think there are very many. I mean, I would guess Kentucky probably does every year.
Well, yeah, but.
But I mean, the depth in the front court, too. I mean, yes, Holden hasn't played here. Bowie hasn't played here. Solomon.
Is it true freshman?
Yeah, but clearly you can see what physically they offer. And obviously, two of them being transfers, they've demonstrated that they can score and they can rebound.
I might just be drinking the Kool-Aid. But I'm just feeling better. Like every day, I don't know if it's I'm just excited.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. I think these guys get it, you know?
I think so too. And I think last year was awfully important to that.
Yeah.
You know, getting the buy-in. You know, when George Niang became such a fantastic shirt you have with George
Niang
and number on the back. T-shirt from NBA Fans Up Pacers site or whatever. Mm-hmm. Prohm was able to turn him. I mean, think about the impact, the connection Fred Hoiberg made to all these guys. And Prohm was able to pretty quickly get Niang with him, kind of like because the whole deal, turning Abdul Nader around, who almost left. Monte's with them. I mean, some of the things, we all knew that he came in and he had kind of a thankless job, given what we knew the potential was with the team and the expectations with the team. But what he did internally, let alone, getting to the Sweet 16 and then Virginia wasn't going to get beat that day, I don't think. But a nice run. But what he did with the guys and their cohesiveness, their collective identity, I think that's really transferred. And that's what makes it extra exciting, no matter what pieces you add. And if Deontay Burton has truly made that change where it's not turn it on, turn it off, then you've got a bunch of guys truly bought in that like you said, the offense and defense, I think the combinations are really endless when you think about the athleticism and the length and just the experience in the guard court as well.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm just excited for basketball season, just in general, not just Iowa State.
Yeah, get some big Mondays out there.
Yeah.
Get some tournaments going.
I think me and my roommates are going to spring for a apartment-wide NBA League Pass account.
Mm. So you'll not only tons of college hoops, but...
all the NBA hoops I can take.
The product... Were you young enough when it was the no-defense league? I mean, or were you old enough where they went through a stretch where... It felt like there was no defense in the league, and it just was not that much fun to watch. It was like 5, 6, 7 years span, and it hasn't been that way for, I'd say, at least the last five. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've figured things out with some rule changes, some things they allow, some things they take away, that it's such entertaining basketball again. It takes me back to my younger days, where it's still not as high scoring as, say, when I was 10, 12, 14 years old, routinely games would be like 122, 114.
Yeah.
And all. That's starting to come back a little. But they played defense, too. It just was such a fast-moving, flow-driven game. And it is, I think, a lot of fun to watch. So you'll make full use of that league pass, I'm sure.
Yeah. Growing up in Clarinda, nobody liked the NBA. Mm. I mean, some of my friends did because we really liked basketball. But nobody watched the NBA in Southwest Iowa. Still today, nobody watches the NBA, really.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. So, I didn't grow up with the NBA, watching the NBA, really. Until I got to college, I started to watch a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You got anything else to add?
Not really. Just, a good amount of basketball content. Chris Williams had his fine Monday musings today. He'll have some other content. The usual great podcasts throughout the week. And thanks, of course, to our sponsor again at Heartland Flagpoles and Flags.
Of course, for any of your flags needs, U.S. flags, military, historical, sports, anything, check them out online, heartlandflagpoles.com. Check out their showroom, 3719 Southwest 9th Street in Des Moines, or give them a call, 1-800-340-1157. Thanks, Rob Gray.
Thank you, Jared.
Have a great week, everybody.